And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
It's so classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and welcome to the show. And we have a good one for you this evening. We have our guest, Mark D'Antonio. He's a repeat guest. And we're going to be talking anywhere from possible alien and alien detection. He doesn't know that yet. To space junk. Which I really want to talk about. It's very interesting to me. To the new Mars InSight lander. Also, China has landed a high-definition lander on the moon and taken some interesting images. Also, I want to announce that after this show tonight at 8:30 p.m. ET, Mark will be doing some type of show he's going to talk to us about where anyone can join in. It's actually through his telescope and all that. So we're going to talk about that as well. He has a little observatory right on his property in Connecticut. And so that will be fun. And so just a couple of things. We are live. Anyone can watch the full shows on YouTube. Is there more than one YouTube? No, just YouTube. Every Tuesday night at 6 to 8. And that's Eastern Standard Time. You can also check out our website. And on our website, you can watch it there as well. And it's also on KGRA Radio at the same time. We have a chat room over there and a chat room on YouTube. You're welcome to join in. We have Amanda helping us out with the chat tonight. Going to be sending questions, forwarding questions to myself to ask Mark from both chat rooms, actually. So that should be interesting. We will take calls in the second hour of the show, too, as well. And let's see. I want to thank everyone that helps out with the show. I really do appreciate it. Without your help, I couldn't do that. We also have a blog that Chris wrote in Tasmania. Send it in. And it's about Jeremy Corbell and his recent Lazar movie that's coming out. And today, I believe it's out. Today? Is today the 4th? Yes, it is. I do believe it's today that it has come out. So anyway, all that is on podcastufo.com. We also have an active Facebook page with over 20,000 people and news stories posted every day. Peggy helps out with that. I want to thank her for doing that. And all right, I guess we're ready to roll. Alejandro, thank you for joining us.
Hello, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us as usual.
And it's my pleasure.
We missed you last week, so it's good to have you back.
Oh, was I not on?
Yeah, you were doing you were going to the airport. You forgot. You went to the airport.
Was it last week or the week before? Last week, I think, was when I was trying to do something, and it was the internet was crappy in my room.
Oh, that's
right. I apologize for that.
Yeah, we tried to do a pre-record, and that didn't work out. Yeah, that's right.
Sorry. I feel real bad about that.
I'm sure you did.
I did.
Okay.
But at the at risk of upsetting, I mean, I got my whole background, and I made sure I've even got, like, back here. I know I probably shouldn't move my camera, but I've got a whole little UFO high-tech setting back there. I could see Mark here on my end already, and he gave me the thumbs up there, so he enjoys it.
Yeah, you have quite a bit of paraphernalia, UFO paraphernalia.
I do.
Yeah, wow.
Just because we
That's
keep getting more
too,
and more
right?
stuff for this store, the UFO Congress store. We've got all kinds of UFO junkies and alien junkies and stuff like that, and Mark spent some time here, your guest, actually, just a few weeks ago.
That's right, yeah.
He spent a few days hanging out here and checking out our collection, and we've gotten even more since he's been here. So he inspired us. His strange alien-like behavior really helped us think out of the box.
Now, those little UFO, that thing that's actually, you want to tip the camera? This is for YouTube only, of course. But is that actually, it actually It's not touching the ground, right? It's actually hovering.
See that?
It's electromagnetic.
Actually hovering. And alien anti-gravity technology,
of course.
Which Mark will tell you.
Yes. Stephen Greer has harnessed that somehow, right? Anyway, sorry I slipped that in there. Now, do you sell those actually on your website?
We do. So this is a black one. I think we're out of them. I think you know Dale. Remember Dale? He's an artist who...
Oh, yeah.
He bought the last one of this color, but we have some more that are all gray and all silver. They're actually super, super cool.
Actually,
I don't even know which is my favorite because they're all equally cool.
Let's just quickly tell who Dale is. He's was it The Simpsons? Was that?
Yeah, he's an art character designer for The Simpsons. So, in fact, he's done me, and we've got a whole set because, of course, at Open Minds, Jason McClellan used to work there and Maureen Ellsbury. So he did us kind of doing a podcast radio show, which was kind of cool. And he's got one of Lee Spiegel and a few others that he's done.
Lee Spiegel's Triangle UFO.
Well, that's not a – yeah, he Simpsonized all of us, all of the people I was talking about. But, yes, he did do that artwork of Lee Spiegel's amazing sighting.
Right.
And what's great about Lee Spiegel's sighting is that he went to this location at the behest of J. Allen Hynek, who, of course, is a real-life person who is going to be portrayed in this new History Channel television show called Project Blue Book here that starts in January.
Right. That will be fun. I can't wait for that to get going.
I got to see the last couple episodes. Did we already talk about that?
I think
on your show.
So possibly.
It's really good, though. It's really cool. And have you ever had Bryce Zabel on your show?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Hollywood guy.
Yeah.
So Bryce Zabel did the show Dark Skies, and what was interesting is I was expecting that they were going to try to do an X-Files type of show with this Project Blue Book, but it's actually much more Dark Skies. It really felt like Dark Skies. I even emailed Bryce. I was like, hey, I just saw the first couple episodes of Project Blue Book. I'm not sure if you got to a premiere. He said, no. Why? Is it like Dark Skies? And I was like, yeah, exactly. It reminded me very much of your show. Just because it's historic, and if anybody remembers Dark Skies, you know, it was more, you know, accurate towards speculation about, you know, government conspiracies and stuff. And, of course, this is based on real Project Blue Book cases, but they add this conspiracy stuff. So they even add Men in Black and stuff like this, stuff that Hynek really didn't get involved with necessarily. But, of course, they've got to add some drama to the show. And many speculate that I even had the guy on. You've had him, too. I think the guy who wrote the recent autobiography or a recent biography of J. Allen Hynek. And he says, you know, nobody knows. There are hints that Hynek felt that they were hiding information from him. But nobody knows for sure how Hynek felt about that or if he knew more than he let on. But we all know from this memo when they did close Project Blue Book, the Bollinger memo, where this general essentially said, go ahead and close Blue Book because we send the most interesting cases elsewhere anyway.
I got to know Tom Snyder, talk show host. Are you familiar with who
really?
He is?
Really? Yeah. Yes, very much so. The white hair.
Yeah.
Tall guy.
Dan Aykroyd used to imitate him. Actually, he said he was actually friends with Dan Aykroyd. He thought that the Ooh. Imitation was a riot. But anyway, I'm still in touch with Pam Burke. That's his wife, a widow. I saw something about Tom Snyder interviewing J. Allen Hynek. So I said, hey, Pam, what did you think of J. Allen Hynek? And she said, oh, my God, that was one of my very, very favorite and Tom's favorite guests. She said he had such a sense of humor. It was really great to talk to her about it. And
that's fascinating. You know, I don't know if I told you this because I guess I haven't been on because I was at AlienCon also a few weeks ago and in Baltimore, and I was doing several different talks, and one of them was about Spielberg. In the beginning of the show, I talk about Close Encounters, which was inspired by Hynek. So I go over Hynek a bunch, and I talk about how great Hynek is. I even mentioned how excited I am about this new History Channel show. Well, at the end of my talk, this guy walks up to me and says, I'm Paul Hynek. This is Hynek's son.
Yeah.
And he said, thank you for all the nice things you said about my father. So that was really cool. But I did include a video of Hynek where he makes a joke about flying saucers. And remember, if you are offended by this joke at all, it's Hynek who said it, not me first. But he said, if you want to see a flying saucer, one of the jokes is, and he was complaining about the term flying saucer, but he said, one of the jokes out there is, if you want to see a flying saucer, just goose the waitress.
Oh, jeez. I'm glad you didn't say that. Yeah.
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 I'd never say
he never
like
knew
that.
Of the Me Too movement. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yep. That was prior to that. That was the men behaving badly or whatever kind of era.
Yeah. For like millennia.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, you got anything going on in the UFO world this week?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it. The Lazar movie launched today. I'm looking at my email, and let's see, because I did already see it. I got a preview copy to look at, and I can answer any questions about it if you want. But it did launch today, too, because I did pay for it, because there's extras, and I want to help support Jeremy because he's a buddy. And I got my email at 1 a.m. I pre-ordered it to download it. So, yeah, it is out there today if you want to check it out. Lots of people excited. It was, if you go to Jeremy's Instagram, which is great because you can see all of the excitement, you know, the big line of people outside of the theater. So very exciting. I'm bummed I couldn't be there. But Dale, the friend we just talked about, was there. I know that Jason McClellan was there, and Ryan Sprague. And David Navarro, the rock guy, you know, the rocker, he was there. He was Instagramming about it last night. And it looked like he got to actually talk with Bob Lazar, who was there. I didn't even realize Bob Lazar was going to be there. So, yeah, pretty interesting stuff. Now, I am curious if it's okay to talk about that right now, about what this blog post is, kind of the gist of the blog post. And also, if you don't mind, I kind of would like to bring Mark on. And Mark, he's listening. I can see him, his camera there waiting on the ISS, or it looks like he's in a submarine or something. But I sent a link in the chat. If you could look at that, because there is a UFO video that's kind of making the rounds right now. And
In the chat,
I'd like to kind of discuss that next.
Yeah.
Our Skype chat.
Oh, I don't know if I can get to that right now with the way things are.
Hopefully Mark can, because I'd like Mark to look at it. Yeah, and Mark, then we'll talk about it.
Mark, so let me introduce Mark. Repeat guest, Mark D'Antonio. We're going to pull him up on the screen, a little blurry, but that's all right.
I want to hear about this blog post on Lazar. Or did you read it yet?
Did I read my own blog post?
Oh, you posted it.
Yeah, it's on my website on Podcast UFO. It's from a gentleman, Chris. He's been writing guest blogs from Tasmania. And basically,
did you read it?
I read through it late last night.
Good.
I can't remember. The gist of it, though, is that he thinks there's, you know, definitely a lot to the Bob Lazar story. And I actually have gotten a few emails today of people saying, you know, what do you have against Bob Lazar? I don't have anything against Bob Lazar. I just question certain things like his education, his claimed education. And when someone claims one thing and it turns out to be wrong, then I kind of question. It's kind of like the appraiser in me, the antiques appraiser. I question everything and one part of something's wrong. So that's basically it. You know, I mean.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. And people will ask, and there's has been these comments, what does Stanton have against Bob Lazar or some? You know, people are looking at it wrong. You don't have to. This is about, you know, getting to the truth and to the facts. And just because someone seems nice, like there are some researchers, well, I met this person. That's why I can say they're telling the truth. Well, just because you've met them and even just because you like them doesn't mean that what they're saying is completely accurate. So it's incumbent upon people like us who are out there trying to share information to heavily scrutinize, you know, what people are saying. And especially someone like Stanton, when they hear, you know, information that they follow up on, like the education or the science, then they have to say, hey, this science is wrong. I know this to be wrong. Even if they're like, I'm sorry, but, you know, you still got to convince me that this science is correct. So, you know, I think those are, it's always, it's fair that we be critical of people I always go back to Sagan, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and so we need to seek that.
Actually, it wasn't Sagan that coined that phrase, but I get what
you're
saying.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
No, no. It was someone before him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he stole it from someone else and took all the credit.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Killjoy.
Go ahead and Google that if you don't believe me, listeners.
Oh, I believe
before
you.
Before I get the
curious.
Hate mail. Hey, I want to introduce Mark D'Antonio because I started to and I forgot why I changed.
It was my fault. I distracted you brought you to Blizzard.
He needs almost no introduction at all. He's an astronomer. And he does a great show. He's also on KGRA Radio and does a thing, a Skywatch thing I joined the other night. Actually, not a Skywatch. It was actually talking about the moon. We can talk about that. Mark D'Antonio, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Hi, Alejandro. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, buddy.
We had a good time when I was out there. I was doing a talk for the Phoenix MUFON, and then I had to teach a week later in the desert for the boot camp for the Mutual UFO Network. And Alejandro said, hey, come spend a few days with us. So I did, and it was a wonderful time. And I got to play with those little UFOs that were hovering. And I got to tell you, I had a lot of fun with that, you know? A lot of fun with that thing.
Mark and I were like kids playing with all of our toys. We did a bunch of astrophotography, which was a lot of fun. And we made a video about, misidentifying, you know, certain things like bugs as UFOs or birds. And then Mark played a little bit of didgeridoo. So if you want to see him doing some didgeridoo, you can go to the Open Minds YouTube and see that. But it was really fun. I felt like a little kid, like, you know, when you're little and you got to go home, your mom comes and picks you up and you're like, I don't want to go. It was kind of sad seeing Mark leave. We had a lot of fun.
I felt, actually, because, you know, Alejandro basically lives in a giant toy box. You know,
and it's do too. Look at your place.
My place notwithstanding, okay?
Yeah, Mark, you're forgetting I've been there, so I can vouch for that.
Yeah, you have.
And but, you do the FX models for also. Do you want to talk? Why don't you just say quickly to the listener who's not heard you before what that's all about?
Yeah, I mean, FX Models, you know, letter X Models is a visual effects company that I started back in 1995, believe it or not. And I started it as a way to start making these very elaborate, very detailed models for movies and commercials and so forth. Well, it turned out that I worked an awful lot for the Navy, and I spent a lot of time working for the Navy, many years actually, doing these projects. And The benefit of FX Models was that I learned a whole host of new techniques, especially when I was working alone a lot of the time. I had to be smart about it. I had to learn how to work alone. And that was much better for me because I ended up creating and getting machinery to help me do all this. That led to getting into astronomy more because I got my degree in astronomy, as you know. And I've been an astronomer for science centers and so forth. And so what I did was I ended up putting an observatory on the front lawn. So it looks like a big white minion out there, okay, with a round head. It's like Stuart, you know. Tonight is a special streaming night, you know, for Sky Tour Live Stream, it's called, and that's on YouTube. And it's a companion stream to Sky Tour Radio, which, as you mentioned, is the KGRA radio show that we do Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. And so Sky Tour Live Stream tonight is special because we're actually doing something a little different. We're actually using the observatory completely remotely because this observatory is being prepared to get shipped to Arizona. And
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, and it's still something that we're planning on doing. And so to that end, I have to really make this thing robust and standalone so that no matter what, I can operate it and run anything that goes wrong through the internet. So that's what I'm doing today. And tonight's stream is going to be the first time we debut this new process and procedure. So tune in if you want to see things either go horribly wrong and laugh your butts off or watch things go wonderfully right.
Yeah. Now, how can they find it, Mark?
It's a Sky Tour live stream. That's Sky Tour, all one word, live stream, all one word. And it's on YouTube.
And it's probably showing there now, like if someone wanted to save it. Is that a regular show that you do, right?
Well, it's a clear night stream.
I see
that I do, and you know, Amanda Curran, who is my co-host on SkyTour Radio, is also my co-host on SkyTour Livestream. So it's all things SkyTour. Everything's SkyTour for us. So we actually do. She creates SkyTour news. She has SkyTour stories and a whole bunch of other things that she does that are really cool in the SkyTour arena. And then I do the live stream, and I'm part of a bigger picture, which is called astroimaginglive.com. That's the website. And there we have Bill New York Skywatcher, who's actually one of KGRA's producers. And we have P&K, Paul and Keith, P&K Space Imaging. Those guys look at the moon and the planets. Bill New York Skywatcher looks at meteors and big meteor showers. And then I'm the one that looks at the deep sky objects. So we go to particular objects in the sky. We look at comets. We look at asteroids. We look at deep space nebula, all these things. And we take people on a tour. And I don't just show them. I mean, I'm an astronomer, so I tell people about them. And I give them a little idea of what they're looking at. Now, when Alejandro and I went out, basically that devolved into playing with lasers on the mountain in the distance. And we were just drawing our names on the mountain with lasers and stuff. And that was really cool.
Hmm. Karen did a perfect star. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I laughed because I didn't think she'd possibly do it. And then she turns around and she does a perfect star the first time. I was like, wow, okay.
You're going to have to share that picture. It's a good one.
Hey, it is a good one. We have about 4 minutes to the break coming up. So, Alejandro, what is it exactly did you want to ask Mark?
Yeah, sorry. I'll leave it at the break. And I just wanted to say one of the news stories out there is a UFO at the Outer Banks. Yeah, I figured you did, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. It is a spectacular-looking video because you see two or three lights out over the ocean that are very bright. But to me, I believe them to be flares. Some people disagree, and Mark can speak more to this. People say, well, flares, you can see smoke. You can see them descending. They flicker. And none of those things are necessarily true. I see flares often. They can be very bright, these new military flares. They're falling at such a slow speed that they don't look like they're falling at all. And I've got video on Open Mind showing this.
Yeah, they're on a parachute. You're right.
Yeah, so they are flares can, and you don't see the smoke on these flares either. So what do you think, Mark? What do you think they are?
I actually photographed exactly this type of thing when I was in Arizona because when I was out in the desert, I had my own private Phoenix Lights, basically. Luke Air Force Base was doing maneuvers, and they were dropping parachute flares. And when they did, and those flares had to be 70 miles away from me at least. And when you look at these two bright lights, you know, these two bright lights that are on the horizon, they look eerie. They look unearthly. But the thing is, they're not unearthly. And when you zoom in on the with the camera and get up close, you can see the smoke. The smoke is not visible to your eye because it's such a low surface brightness to the smoke. But it's there. And then, of course, these flares are descending, actually, at a parachute-type rate. They're really not – and I think you're absolutely correct. I'm with you on this. I think these are actually parachute flares.
Hmm. Sorry, guys. I know some people are going to get upset, but...
Well, they can be upset with me then, because, you know...
Yeah,
I agree, you know, that these are probably... Well, I'd have to say 99.9% that I believe these are parachute flares, because they never change orientation relative to each other. They're descending at a rate that's concurrent and, well, that's actually, coincidentally... the same for a parachute flare drop. So I don't see any reason why these aren't parachute flares. And the color is the important thing.
Well,
the camera's not picking it up as well, but it's an unearthly shade of orange that these things look, and I'm sure it was startling.
We have just like a minute or so to break. So I just want to say the Phoenix lights, you know, a lot of the – or I think maybe perhaps all the video that you see, we have 1 minute left till break, that you see is flares. There may be one – that it's not possibly...
There's only one I'm aware of that might not be flares, but the rest, yes, you're right, are the flares. Because at 10 o'clock, there were flares. Now, I'm not sure, though, because from 8 o'clock earlier in the day, there were sightings out around the Phoenix area and all the way up to, like, Kingman and Needles, just over the border in California. I don't think those were flares, but certainly the 10 p.m. were flares over Goldwater, and I think Mark will concur with that.
And that really kind of – that was – if they were going to cover up, they did a really good job. because
not apparent whether they were trying to do that. We don't have any evidence that they were definitely trying to. But you're exactly right. If they were doing that, it was a genius way to distract people.
Absolutely. Okay, it's time to go to break. So, all right. Thank you so much, Alejandro. I appreciate it.
Have a great show.
Thank you. And all right, everyone, we'll be back with Mark D'Antonio in just a second.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
So, Alejandro, you're still on?
Yeah.
You can stay on.
Okay, for the break here?
Yeah, why not?
Because we're doing, like, this is on YouTube still, right, the break?
That's right. And usually in the break, we take either questions or we talk about something that we weren't talking about. So it doesn't, you know, mess up when we get back on KGRA radio.
But. Well, I don't know if you were going to ask Mark this, but I want to hear what Mark thinks of Lazar. And for both of you, I would like to have this discussion again after you see Jeremy's film, because there is some new stuff here. And Lazar speaks for himself and some of the things that I think all three of us are critical of. But what do you think, Mark?
Actually, I listened to George Norrie interview Bob Lazar the other night. It was an older show, probably, but it was Jeremy Corbell was there with Bob Lazar, and
it was new, actually.
Yeah, but when I say older show, I mean it was like last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, or whatever it was. So, and listening to that, I started listening to the show kind of with that skeptical approach, thinking, you know, I've heard all the things about him and all these things, but then. Listening to him respond, I actually got the impression that, you know, he might actually, there might be something to him, you know, more than
I think he believes what he's saying.
Well, that's my point. I was about to say that. He believes what he's telling you, you know, and so, but then again, I always believe what I'm telling you too. So I could be a blatant liar, I guess, as well, or something. I don't know if that's what he is.
Or you could be telling the truth.
Or you keep telling the truth. And the fact is, we don't have the information to judge him negatively or positively. We have to take it for what it is and let that ride. Because unless somebody comes forward and says, here's a government stamped document that claims, you know, that or shows that Bob Lazar is exactly who he says he was, you know, then what can you say? I believe that he had a clearance because he said certain things during his interview.
You got 1 minute.
Okay.
Thank you.
He said certain things during his interview that led me to believe that he would definitely have had a clearance to say what he said. I know that. I had one for since 1995. All right, nowhere near as high as he supposedly had. You know, so there's more to him than meets the eye, in my view.
Okay, we have less than a minute left, just to let you know.
Yeah, I was just going to say him. I kind of like Travis Walton. They're people that, you know, I take seriously in a way. They seem to believe what they're saying. It's just uncomfortable because what they're saying is so strange. You know, it's so uncomfortable, but very compelling.
Yeah, I think Lazar is more compelling after hearing this than before I heard it. So I'm looking forward to the movie. No, and. You know, I watched the Skinwalker Ranch one, and I wasn't that excited about it.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Yeah,
the Lazar movie sounds like it's probably a better one.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I think as far as I know, I think we're are we ready to go back, Eric?
We got about 30 seconds till intro starts to roll.
All right. All right. So Alejandro, I guess we'll say goodnight for real this time, since I said goodbye to everyone when you were on. But that. So thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you guys later. Have a fun show.
Thank you.
See you later, Alejandro.
Adios. Adios. Great talking to you.
All right. Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Mark D'Antonio, and we are going to be talking about all kinds of great stuff, space stuff. And Mark, so where do you want to start? I have a bunch of different topics I want to talk to you about. You want to start out with space junk, or you want to start out with the landers?
I think that why don't we talk about the most recent thing, which is the Mars InSight lander.
All right, excellent.
So if you want, I can just go through some of the basics, and we can you can. I don't know where you want to go with that.
So first of all, I know that I always love to watch when they land in the control room, where everybody is just so excited, and rightly so. I mean, it's their baby. from you know, from the moment it takes off till it lands, and it's there's so many things that can go wrong, and a lot of times they're unsuccessful, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I know that now the United States has been more successful than other countries in getting to Mars, and that's a good thing. But we've had our share of failures too. But I can say this, the Mars InSight lander, I mean, that was in space for 6 months. And it all came down to the final 7 minutes. That final 7 minutes, as you've heard them say, I'm sure, and those watching and listening have heard, this was the 7 minutes of terror.
Right.
Okay. And yeah, everything, hundreds and hundreds of machine operations and different mechanisms and bolts and explosive bolts and other hardware had to do exactly what it was supposed to do. Not one thing could fail.
That's right.
And it didn't. And as I listened to live, I had butterflies in my stomach because, you know, I'm obviously a big fan, but I think of these probes as if they're actually almost like people in a way, because they are an extension of what we are.
Right.
And what the InSight lander is going to do on Mars is a spectacular mission, and I really, really want to see it happen. And I was just so I was worried, but I was actually confident. JPL has been running on a high ever since Spirit and Opportunity, actually since Curiosity. Okay, Spirit and Opportunity, those landers had a 90-day life expectancy, and they went on for years and years and years, plowing through Martian soil, winter, spring, summer, fall on Mars, and they continued to do their jobs. And Opportunity still continues. If we ever, I don't know if actually we heard back yet from Opportunity. I don't think we did, but Spirit was stuck and mired, and it has a wheel that stopped working, and an Opportunity during the dust storm was lost. So I'm not sure if it'll ever come back, but, you know, there's always hope, right?
That's right.
Yeah, they're listening
and,
to it. So,
and let's talk a little bit about what its mission actually is. It's going to be doing sonar or something to do with the crust of Mars. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, there's several instruments on board the InSight lander, which are really cool. First of all, let's talk about where it went. Right, when it landed and all those many things we talked about went right, it landed in a place called Elysium Planitia, and that is interesting because it's just south of the Viking 2 lander, and it's just north of where the Curiosity rover landed. It's actually closer to where the Curiosity rover landed than Viking. And it has these instruments on board that are designed for very specific purposes. There's a remote manipulator arm that's going to be able to carry instruments off the main body of the lander and drop them onto Mars and set them at a distance, all right? And those instruments, I'll tell you what they are. One is called the SEIS instrument, S-E-I-S, and that stands for Seismic Experiment for Internal Structure. And that's going to be deployed by that remote arm. And it has a little dust and thermal shield on top of it. So it looks like a little bug, a little round-topped bug. And it can detect really small vibrations. And I mean vibrations down to the atomic level. This is probably one of the most advanced seismometers, if you want to call it that, ever made. And there might be liquid moving around inside Mars, and this will be able to feel it, right? There might be frictional vibration imparted on boulders, you know, many, many miles away or hundreds of miles away that this this thing can feel. It'll give us an idea of how the atmosphere of Mars is working, what the internal structure within Mars is, because if there's liquid water down there, it'll feel it, it'll hear it, and it'll be able to look at the rhythmic patterns and figure something out based on any rhythmic pattern. So if water's sloshing, we'll find it, basically. So the weather systems also cause vibrations in the atmosphere of Mars, and these vibrations are something that are also highly important that'll tell us, you know, tell us more about how Mars works, because we've been there, we've drilled a little into the soil, but we haven't done anything like this is going to do. Okay, because this experiment, it has an experiment on it called the HP cubed experiment, and that stands for heat flow and physical properties probe. So P cubed. So the heat flow and physical properties probe is going to be deployed by the remote manipulator arm, a separate little unit. These are both the seismic deployable system and this HP cubed experiment are going to be connected by little ribbon cables back to the main lander. But this one is the heat probe is going to actually drill down 16 feet into the Martian surface. 16 feet. I mean, but keep in mind, the InSight lander is the size of an old, convertible station wagon. Okay, I mean, or convertible rather, like a 60s convertible. It's not small, and each of the solar panels are like 7 feet in diameter, and it has two, one on each side.
I can't even imagine how they could coordinate, like the assemblage of a drill bit, because obviously it's not a 16-foot long drill bit. It has to be put together somehow.
Yeah, there's actually the system is really complex, of course, and it's going to be going down and basically hammering itself down into the surface. Okay, and the idea is to get it 16 feet down. And why would they do that? Well, it's going to go down, and what it's going to do is detect something very important, and that important thing is checking the heat that is actually escaping Mars. All planets that have some type of solar impingement, that is to say any solar energy striking the surface, are going to give off some heat that's going to get absorbed into the interior of the planet, and then the planet's going to give off some of the heat. So that's one. The second thing is if the core of the planet is still semi-molten on Mars, all right, then you're going to get some heat that's given off by that, and that's going to end up getting out of the crust eventually. And that's what this experiment's designed to look for, is to check the heat being released by Mars. Now, very important stuff. Now, we've talked on SkyTour Radio, and Amanda Curran, my co-host, knows all about this. It's one of her favorite topics. We've talked about a special way to get Mars to terraform itself. Now, we know that our planet has a magnetic field. The magnetic field's what keeps our atmosphere basically intact. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the radiation would destroy it. Well, on Mars, that did happen.
Right.
And there was no magnetic field on Mars to speak of, and the atmosphere was a lot thicker, but it was destroyed over time. So what we have to do is restart the magnetic field of Mars. Well, how would we do that? Well, we could restart the core, basically. If we get the core to be molten again and the outer core and the inner core of Mars rub against each other, they'll create electric currents, which will create a magnetic field. But guess what? That's probably far beyond even an advanced species. So what else is there? Well, we could use the fact that there are points in space around Mars where all the gravitational forces basically sum to zero. So there's like parking spots in space. These are called Lagrange points.
Oh, yeah.
If we can, right. If we can put a unit out there from Mars at the Mars Lagrange point number one, which is between Mars and our sun, you know, a few tens of millions of miles from Mars, then if that was a magnetic field generator of some kind, all right, then the solar energy striking the magnetic field would actually drape that magnetic field behind this magnetic field generator. And also, if Mars was close enough, then it would drape it behind Mars as well. And it would actually basically coat Mars with a protective sheath of a magnetic field on that downwind side, basically. And we're talking about solar wind, high energy electrons and protons that are making their way to Mars. And those bombard the atmosphere every single day and destroy water vapor that's in the atmosphere. Well, if we can shield Mars from that process artificially with this magnetic shield, and it's actually a real project on the NASA docket, by the way, is a magnetic shield for Mars. If we could do that, then we would find that we'd have a Mars that is a lot more conducive to letting the water vapor stay in the atmosphere. And if that happens, it'll get warmer and the polar caps will begin to melt. The CO2, the carbon dioxide parts of the polar caps will sublimate and go away and become carbon dioxide, making the atmosphere heavier with this greenhouse gas. And that will make it warmer again, and the water will begin to melt, the water ice, which there's a lot of on Mars. And if it melts, then we can have a thicker atmosphere. And if we have a thicker atmosphere, well, then you see Mars is terraforming itself, because Mars generates water vapor all the time. It's just destroyed, you know, by the ultraviolet radiation that's impacting it from the sun. A magnetic shield would prevent that, you see. So we actually see a way to actually do real terraforming at Mars, and we don't even have to touch the planet.
Amazing. I'm going to ask you a hypothetical. I know no scientist likes to answer hypothetical, but now – we do know that there's signs of water and possibly a lot of water on Mars at one time, and flowing streams or flowing rivers, yeah. Or you know, brookstones, you know, smooth over snow stones and everything from running yeah. water. The hypothetical is, would you think that it's possible that there was life on Mars or not at one time?
Actually, I don't think that's too far-fetched. We talk about microbial life. Advanced life? I would probably say not enough. Look at what happened here. We were kind of in the quote-unquote perfect location, and yet our planet is still far from perfect. We've had 5 major extinction events that have killed a lot of life on this planet, up to 96% of it at one time. Okay, and yet we survived. We persisted. You know, a couple hundred million years ago, the Permian period was in full force, and mammals, like we are, were dominant at the time. But then there was this great dying, and 96% of the species died. But dinosaurs, the reptiles, the larger reptiles, they were relatively unaffected. And this started the age of the reptiles. That's why we had dinosaurs on the planet. And then when 65 million years ago, when the Chicxulub event, or the Cretaceous-Paleogene event it's called, you know, the death of the dinosaurs, basically, when that asteroid struck the planet, that caused the reptiles to go into retreat, and now those mammals that were hiding in the shadows for millions of years were able to come back out, and again, we achieved dominance and became what we are. On Mars, that process, okay, would have taken a lot of time, just like here.
But how do you know there was any extinction events on Mars to say that there was, you know, animals on there at one time? You know,
we don't know.
Or creatures.
Yeah, we don't know, but we do know that given the time frame, Mars is about as old as the Earth, basically. And so we look at the fact that over hundreds of millions of years, life developed on this planet. I mean, if you look way before the first Cambrian creatures were in the Cambrian oceans, okay, we had probably 2.7 billion years ago, we had blue-green algae, basically, on the planet, cyanobacteria. These bacteria were gobblers of carbon dioxide. Well, they could have existed on Mars. I don't see any reason why they couldn't. Why? Because the universe creates a template for carbon-based life, okay? Meteors deliver carbon-based compounds. Comets deliver carbon-based compounds. Asteroids deliver carbon-based compounds and water, okay, along with comets. So the carbon-based life form is actually sort of a predestined type life form that you might see. And I say might because we can't be sure of uncertainty, right? And on Earth it happened, so why couldn't it have happened on Mars? Mars at one time was a warmer clime. It was actually a more well-developed planet. It had a magnetic field until the core of Mars began to cool enough so the magnetic field was no longer effective, and that's when everything happened. That's when the atmosphere began to thin because of ultraviolet radiation killing the H2O molecules. It would split them apart. The hydrogen would get lost to space, and the oxygen atoms would actually go down into the soil and bond with things like iron to create FeO, which is iron oxide, and that's rust, and that's why Mars is red.
So that
you see a chronology here. Now, there was a lot of water on Mars, no doubt. And people say, well, where is it? Well, we're seeing this at the end of the cycle. We're seeing it at the time when Mars water is now locked up subsurface in ice hard as granite. And we're seeing it at a time when Mars is at a point where it doesn't have an atmosphere that is thick enough to allow liquid water on the surface any longer. However, we see evidence of liquid water even in recent years occurring on Mars, mostly in the sides of deep craters where suddenly, right, you know this, that there's a burst of water that comes gushing out of the side. It's probably very salty, and it goes racing down the crater interior toward the bottom of the crater. But as it's falling, it's also sublimating. It's going away, you know, and when it goes to when it goes to water vapor, then the water vapor is destroyed by the ultraviolet radiation. So this, and then of course it leaves the salts behind. So this is what we see on Mars now. Okay, we don't see standing water except at the South Pole. And it's down, I think, about a kilometer below the surface. There's a 12-kilometer long actual subsurface lake near the South Pole of Mars.
Wow.
That's very important because that's telling us that there's actually actual real standing water and that there's a place where the warmth from the interior of the planet is warm enough so that the pressure from the overlying rock strata, the warmth coming from the core radiating out to those rock strata is enough to allow liquid water to form. And that's the pressure of the overlying rocks, which are providing the pressure and the mass, basically, and thus the weight on Mars, to allow for that water to exist as water as we know it. It's just an interesting it's perplexing at all the new things we're learning about Mars. You know, it's just absolutely incredible, you know.
There's a question related to that, Daryl from YouTube. And thanks again to Amanda for giving me these questions. Daryl from YouTube wants to ask, Mark, didn't one of the that just moved. Didn't one of the Viking landers have such strong results from a test for life that they disregarded the results? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, you know, I actually had the they're this thick. I'm making a gesture for like 2.5 to 3 inches. I had all the results of the Viking landers, and I pored over them for many years. And that experiment they're talking about was one, I think, where they were baking some minerals in an oven, and based on what they were on board the Viking, because we had like a little easy bake oven basically inside of the Viking, and it would cook these elements to try and or these minerals and try to see what comes off. Now, here's what happens. Typically, just like on Earth, certain minerals can only form in the presence of water. So they look and they gauge how much of a certain mineral is present, and that tells them how much water may have been present. Okay, we do that on Earth. When we look back and we figure out how much water we had, how much oxygen we had, et cetera. Well, on Mars, when they were doing this experiment, there were some results that seemed like they might have been an error because the results were so promising. Now, I don't think that it's necessarily an error, and guess what? NASA doesn't think so either, and that's why this Mars InSight lander landed just south of the Viking 2 position.
Hmm. Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah, this is farther south than it is from the Curiosity position. Curiosity, if you recall, it found these wonderful little round spheres. Now, people have to understand that when they look at pictures from Mars, they're in false color, except for the ones that are just all kind of a salmon, ruddy, reddy, red color. Okay, Mars doesn't have a whole lot of color other than the red. And that's something that so when they look at these little spherules that they found, they called them blueberries. Now, they were blue because of the fact that they were formed in the presence of water, but they were false colored. They were false colored. That wasn't their real color. They looked like little pink nodules, but because of their mineral content, they were marked as blue. Okay, so it was sort of a algorithm that painted them that way based on their mineralogy. So we're not looking at a real color here, and that's why sometimes the photo showed blue sky, and that brought all the people that said, "Oh, look, Mars really has blue sky. Ah, it's really they're hiding it from us." It's like, oh my gosh, you know, to what end? You know, if Mars had blue sky, we'd just have said, "Hey, Mars has blue sky. Yeah, there's a lot more than that goes into this." What's interesting is at sunset on Mars, the sky is blue. Okay, it's sunset. All right. Which is kind of cool. Usually at sunset, it's red here, right? Well, on Mars, it's more blue. Okay, and it's for the opposite. It's for the similar but different reasons that the sky's red at our sunset. So,
how about that.
Yeah. So anyway, InSight landed just relatively south. It's sort of near the Martian equator, in Elysium Planitia, and Viking was north, obviously. But it's on that side of the planet. It's in the same relative region as Viking 2. So it'll be interesting to see what this thing turns up. And that heat flow probe is going to be very important, too, for when it drills. Now, then there's more instruments on InSight than that, but still, yeah, it's really cool.
That'd be really interesting to know whether there is a heated core. There should be, I would think there would be, but whether
it's... Some heat, yes, but yeah. But is it molten anymore?
Yeah, is it molten? You know, is it moving at all? You know, I know without the electromagnetosphere, it's possibly not moving at all. Now, I do want to say that we're talking about Mars. We're going to go into some other things, but we have and the reason I'm saying that is because we are getting some questions from YouTube that Amanda's passing along. But I'm only going to ask the ones related to Mars right now. We have about 4 minutes to a break. Before I ask this question, I just keep forgetting to let the listeners know that upcoming shows I have David O'Leary from Project Blue Book. He is the creator of that for the History Channel. He's going to be on if you're listening to YouTube, he's going to be on December 23rd along with Dave Marler. That's for a full show. And but that will be our Christmas show. So that'll be released during the day of Christmas. And we have next week, we have a professor of history talking about UFOs. It should be interesting. So that's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with Greg Egrim. And he is a professor of history, and he's going to be talking about the history of UFOs. It should be very interesting. I don't believe there's any interviews with him out there that I'm aware of on that subject. So anyway, I want to thank you for listening. Anyone can join us as far as a subscription for $2 or more a month. You get the full shows plus archives. This show tonight was just under an hour. The show did last for just about 2 hours. So again, $2 a month or more, and that's on podcastufo.com. You can get that information there. And you can also do a yearly payment if you'd like to subscribe for that. The show does cost money weekly, and I really appreciate if you could help out. So that's it. Thanks so much, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.